Did you know that parents rank teaching financial literacy as the toughest life skill? That's where Greenlight comes in, the debit card and money app made for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and track spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn how to earn, save, and spend responsibly, while parents have peace of mind knowing smart money habits are being built with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/trygreenlight. That's greenlight.com/trygreenlight.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
There was supposed to be a lot of emotions in the last week. A lot of things have been delayed and pushed aside now that the speedy trial is off the table in the case of Koberger. But with what we've seen, Ann Taylor, we notably having some issues with cameras in the court and people focusing on Brian Koberger's crotch, which is a phrase I never thought I'd have to say out loud, but that's literally what was in some of the filings. What's your take on where this is going and what has been filed thus far now that we're kind of in a new phase of this whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's going to happen is we're going to have traditional motion work. You know, when that speedy trial demand is like looming, it puts so much pressure, not just on the state, but on both sides. You know, I mean, in terms of getting full discovery tendered and the defense having time to go through it all and to figure out whether or not they have motions that they need to file, such as motions to suppress, motions to quash, all those different motions, which I anticipate that we'll see now since the trial is going to be kicked. And they're important. You know, I mean, there's going to be issues there. And we can tell, like, I mean, if you look at that docket in, you know, in whatever it's been, what is it, 8 months?
Yeah, somewhere around there. I've lost track.
Yeah, it's packed, man. Yeah. Like this, it's a death penalty case. It's what you'd expect in that type of case. There's just a ton of paperwork being filed, ton of motions, and there's going to be a ton more. So as far as kind of my view on the camera situation, I would not be shocked if the judge limited it in terms of the pretrial stuff. I don't think, because the issue, you know, they're worried about tainting the jury pool, you know, and as much as some people don't think that's an issue, I know it to be an issue because I've actually practiced law and tried high profile cases. It is an issue. Yeah. You can absolutely taint a jury pool, especially in a small community like that, you know, and I've spoken with lawyers in that area who are of the mindset that they shouldn't move it. You know, that they shouldn't file a motion for change of venue as did in Val. And, you know, I kind of have to take their word for it. You know what I mean? In terms of, you know, kind of the dynamics of the Idaho court system, you know, like if it was me, I would 100% be trying to move it, you know, but in Illinois, if I seek a change of venue, the judge travels with the case, as does the state's attorney, as does the court staff, everyone goes. So it's like, if we move venue, then it's not like you're having to use a different prosecutor and a different judge. You're changing the location of where the trial is going to be held so that you can impanel a jury from that particular county. Whereas what's the trend now, like what they're doing in the Delphi case, is they're importing a jury, which I think is much easier. It's much more cost efficient because, you know, you're not having to move everything. And you have a case like Koberger. I mean, just transporting the evidence, man, like is a massive undertaking. It's like they did the same thing in Gacy when my dad was trying that.
Yeah.
And they were one of the original cases to import a jury. They imported a jury from Rockford into the city and then they sequestered them, put them up in a hotel for the duration of the trial, instead of having to try to move the whole thing to Rockford. So, I mean, there's options there. And I think probably, you know, if I was the attorney for the state or for the defense, either one, I don't think that either one would object. Like if the state's, you know, looking at it, because look, we all want the trial to go right the first time. All of us do.
Sure.
Like no matter what side you're on.
Yeah.
If you think he's innocent, if you think he's guilty. The bottom line is none of us want these victims' families to have to go through this nightmare again. This should be a one and done. You don't want this getting overturned on appeal. It would be a nightmare for the families, an absolute nightmare to have to sit through it all over again. So it's important for both sides to have a good, fair trial the first time around. And, you know, in order to do that, I think the state would probably not object to importing a jury from a different county if they wanted to do that, as opposed to kind of moving everything. So we'll see how that plays out. But as far as the camera thing goes, you know, again, I think that ultimately, my gut is telling me he's going to deny the motion, that he's going to put more restrictions in place. It's going to, because he already limited how much they can focus on Koberger when they're filming in there. Yeah. They're like, you know, ease up. Like, we don't want the camera trained on him. Like, after the trial starts, it's moot. It doesn't matter anymore. The jury's been impaneled, so they can film whatever they want. This is all pretrial consideration, all pretrial publicity. And that's what they're trying to control at this point. So, you know, I have a feeling that he will deny the motion, but he will put some more limitations on the pool camera, maybe the still photography as well. And, you know, at that point, like I said, when it gets to trial, it'll be free game. Now, it appears that we're going to be able to watch this one, unlike Vallow. He had to listen to it, which is optimal. I'd obviously prefer to be able to see the witnesses when they're testifying. It's hard to just kind of, because, you know, all that kind of stuff comes into play when you're trying to evaluate credibility of a witness.
You have
to look and see how they're acting on the stand. Are they, you know, touching their ear when they say something? Are they rubbing the back of their head? Are they, you know, you have to try to, you know, the best that we can try to evaluate body language, because it plays into, you know, your evaluation of credibility. So it's obviously preferable, even as just observers, for us to be able to watch it as opposed to just to listen to it. So it seems like that we might get lucky. And because like early on, I was like, man, I don't think they're going to allow cameras in there, especially in light of Vallow. And Vallow's in the same state, different county, but same state.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, so it's like that mindset might prevail, but we'll see. You know, so ultimately what they ended up doing today, they just had that scheduling hearing. And they did reschedule for September 22nd. Should be an exciting day, legal nerds like me. You know, they've got two hearings that they're going to have. Both of them are motions to dismiss the indictment, both on different grounds.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first one's going to go off at 10:30, and that's where they're trying to dismiss the indictment based on a biased grand jury. You know, there was inadmissible evidence that was used, lack of sufficient evidence, and the one that I want to hear is the prosecutorial misconduct.
Yeah.
Like, I want to hear that. But unfortunately, they're sealing that one. So, like, we're not going to get to hear that because they're going to be talking about specific grand jurors, and they want to keep them shielded from the public because it's a secret proceeding. And grand jurors, you know, they're supposed to remain anonymous. You know, I mean, I've seen situations where grand jurors start popping off, like they do interviews and things like that. Mm-hmm. It may have been one in this case. I can't remember, but I think I kind of remember a grand juror speaking, but maybe it's a different case. I follow so many cases, it's hard to know.
Sure.
But, and so that's at 10:30 a.m. It's going to be sealed. We're not going to be able to watch it or hear it. I mean, I'm assuming that we'll be able to get transcripts of it to see what went down. And then at 1 p.m., the one that I really want to hear, which is really legal argument, that's why they're opening the court back up. There's not going to be, at least in theory, there's not going to be witnesses called. It's strictly a legal argument. And I don't know if you've read that motion to dismiss.
I have. There's roughly, 24 points that she's trying to make in that argument. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on the ground that they hold and what sort of, where do you think any of them will go, if anywhere?
I think they'll both be denied ultimately. So, I mean, the first one is the one with all the grounds. Mm-hmm. That's the one with the 24 grounds. And the second one is basically, I think we talked about it kind of at length in our last episode. And that is the argument that the Idaho Constitution, the language in there basically calls for that a grand jury has to find the same standard that applies at trials, which is beyond a reasonable doubt, in order to bind him over for trial. Obviously, that is not the case anywhere in the country. I mean, it's always probable cause.
Sure.
You know, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. But what she's arguing is that when the, you know, Idaho made its criminal rules, which those are prepared by the Supreme Court of Idaho, and they lowered the standard to what the rest of the country has, which is probable cause that crime was committed, and it's probable cause that he was the one who did it.
Yeah.
And it's a much lower burden. You know what I'm saying? So that's what they went to the grand jury with. She's arguing, look, I understand there's competing language here, but I'm just telling you that the Constitution of the state trumps whatever the Supreme Court put out. So it's a very interesting legal argument. And I my gut is telling me that she's been sitting on that thing forever. Like that she's been chomping at the bit for one of these cases to go to a grand jury because they typically don't use them there.
Yeah.
They're rare. You know, like they just don't. They typically go to preliminary hearings. So this was, you know, a rare occasion. And I think that she's probably been talking to her lawyer buddies at dinner. Like, you know, this Constitution thing. So I think she's probably been like just waiting for this to come up. I don't think that she came up with it like just based on this case. It's like, it's one of those things where lawyers, when they start delving into the law, there's always, you know, a couple of things where you're like, no, that's something I'd like to try to litigate someday.
And sure.
Know, sometimes you have to wait for the opportunity and sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, you're just too busy to do it. But so that'll be interesting. And that's going down at 1 p.m. That one, they are going to open the courtroom. So we should be able to watch that one because, again, it's legal argument. So, and then at that point, they also vacated, obviously, the trial for the second. That's October. That's gone. So, yeah, I mean, that was basically it. That's basically what went down today. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think she's going to win either of those motions. I mean, if she were to win it, especially the more legal argument, I mean, if something with what like truly went down with one of the grand jurors in terms of bias can prove, I mean, it could get granted, but I mean, they're just going to indict him again.
It would just reset the clock. Yeah, it wouldn't.
Right, exactly.
It resets the clock and puts everything back in time 8 months.
Exactly. He's not walking. You know, I mean, like if people are worried, like, oh my God, if they like win that bill, they'll just re-indict him. You know, like the defense will say, oh, well, we want to have that preliminary hearing now.
Yeah.
And they will probably say, nah, we're gonna go through the grand jury again. So, but we'll see how it shakes out. Like my gut's telling me that the judge will deny both.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.